Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, my name's Chris Paul and I am the CEO and founder of Man on Inverclyde, a mental health charity based in Greenock in the west of Scotland. And we're bringing you this message today to raise awareness of mental health and raise awareness of our charity and how we can maybe support you, your friends or your loved ones if you need it. Now, we started off as a suicide prevention charity and we're continuing that mission. We want to break the stigma attached to mental health. We want to break the stigma attached to men's mental health, and I know that a lot of men will be listening to this podcast, so please get in touch with us via Man on Inverclyde on social media. You'll find us on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. If you're not on social media and you want to get in touch with us via email, just type in support@manoninverclyde.com. Our landline here is 01475 910258. So yeah, get in touch with us if you're struggling with your own mental health or you're concerned about a friend or a family member. One of our staff members are volunteers here to support you. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to the Gallant Few, the Rangers podcast. My name's Colin McDuff and I am sworn off Belgian chocolate for life. We're here to discuss all the happenings at Rangers and disclaimer, folks. The first 10-20 minutes of this might be three angry men shouting at clouds as we try and get it off our chests and look ahead to Saturday. Here for a wee bit of Rangers therapy, joining me, first of all, Davey Tomlinson. Davey, how are you? And Davey's left himself in mute. I'm keeping that in.
well, just realised that I was on mute, as you told me. But no, keeping well. Thanks for the nice things you said about me last week. Just to let the people know, I was supposed to be getting operated, but it didn't go through. So I'm getting operated next week. So that's what it was all about. No, obviously not happy with the game last night. So we'll get round to that once we get into the talk. No, I'm okay, and it's really warm here. That's the worst thing. So if I look a bit sweaty, I am.
If I look a bit sweaty as well, I've just said to you boys off air that I've just gone back to the gym, and I think I've said before, it's a kickboxing gym, and fucking hell, I just go for fitness, but honestly, I get flung about like a wet tacky, man. I didn't even know my hair could be sore. Like, I'm sore everywhere. I'm not covered for it. Anyway,
well, Colin, I'm afraid it's no tea tonight. Warm tea. It's old cold beer.
After the week you've had, my man, I think that's fair, especially after what Rangers put you through. Also joining is Davey Pollock. How are you, Davey?
In the circumstances as well as could be expected. So, but obviously Tuesday night was a bit of a catastrophe. But the game's still alive. I'm hoping that, you know, that this Tuesday will be a vast improvement. But we'll pick the bones out of it, go over it, and try and find the silver lining. I'm still looking. So help me.
I know. This is the only thing. We're not doing this video live. It would have been nice if we'd done it a bit earlier and maybe listeners' comments should come in and derail us away from talking about this game. But there's no getting away from it. We've put it off long enough. We need to just dissect it. So, Davey T, I'll start with you. Let's look at the lineup. We had John McLaughlin in goals. Back five, Tavernier, Golson, Sands, Lundstrom, Barisic. Midfield to Jack Kamara. And in front of them, Matondo, Tillman and Čolak. Before I seen the formation, I'm not going to lie, David, I was quite happy with the lineup. I thought that was a good enough side to go and take the game to Union Saint-Gilloise, whatever they're called. What was your thoughts?
No, well, I thought it was a bit defensive. I thought it depends how you're going to play it. For me, if you're going to put out that team, then you need to suck them to you. I don't think when you play Kamara and Jack and Lundstrom, who was moving into the midfield when we had the ball, when you play the three, they're normally in one line across the middle of the park. Now, when you've got them in the middle of the park, the only thing you can do is play square balls. So the way it was working out, the other team, Union, they were sitting back saying, okay, pass the ball about there, youngers, guys. We'll sit and wait till you make a mistake and lose the ball. And that's what they done. They just sucked us in, kept us passing. And then as soon as they realised that there was a ball about a yard off course, they moved in. And there was about four runners. Every time they get the ball, there was about four runners, which we didn't have one runner. I mean, we had the whole game, virtually. Čolak was right. They had a back five, actually. But they had a back three watching Čolak. And Čolak was running from one to the other one. And I think the guys were sitting there going, the Belgian guys were sitting going, hey, Hans, he's coming to you. Okay, I'll take him. Okay, Pete, he's coming to you. Okay, great. He's coming back now. Okay. I mean, it was just like that. And that's what you get when we just haven't got a midfielder. And Tillman tried at the beginning, the first 20 minutes, 30 minutes, he tried to get into that gap where Čolak was sort of operating as well. He tried to get in there, and he had some success at the beginning. And, Tillman, the only thing, we didn't cash in on it. That's been waiting for that one. No, that's a team. I wasn't happy with the team. I think you need, if you're going to play the way we played last night with Jack and Kamara and Lundstrom, then you need a number 10, somebody running about Čolak, and that's what we didn't have. We had Matondo, and I wish they would get blooming names with Bill or something like that. try to get these names right all the time. Matondo and Tillman ended up going out wide as well to try, and it just left Čolak alone, stuck in the middle, running about these three guys all the time. So that's sad. No, I wasn't pleased. I think we should have had a more attacking midfielder in there.
DVP, what was your initial thoughts on it as well? I do agree with Davey. It was the setup. As soon as I seen Lundstrom dropping in, and it wasn't just the dropping in. Like, we've done well with Lundstrom dropping in, but the three centre halves and the two midfielders were just on top of each other. None of them moved for the centre circle. And we just had five players in the one area, and it was just, there wasn't enough movement, enough space used well enough.
Well, we never managed to penetrate them through the middle entirely in the first half. The second half, I think, did we actually get into their box? So the midfield setup was wrong. Obviously, it's the first time we've played those three boys up front, and I've got an issue with that as well, which we'll come on to, but the midfield, we were just getting overrun. And Dave's right, you know, they were quite happy for us to ping the ball about. And then as soon as they won possession, they were straight onto us and cutting straight through us. So and we had nothing like that. We just never had put their defence under any pressure. You know, we could to commit men to allow us to use the wide players. We just fell right into the trap. I don't know whether that was intentional by Gio, sorry, in terms of, you know, the tactical layout, maybe it was just all too negative for me. We should have gone out there with a bit more on the front foot to have a go at them. I think Rangers were of a mind that we were just going to absorb whatever they could throw at us, and it clearly didn't work, because when they were coming at us, they looked dangerous. When they were getting into our box, they were doing it two or three passes, much like we did to West Ham a few weeks ago in terms of picking the ball off them. Three passes later, you're in the penalty box. That's what they did to us. It wasn't a pretty watch. I was uttering sweary words at the TV by this time.
And
it was, I would have to say, though, it's kind of concerning for me that Gio, you know, because we haven't scored a goal in an away game, an away European tie in the last three attempts. You know, when we can look at Braga, Leipzig, and now Union Saint-Gilloise, we haven't scored a goal. Whereas when we were, you know, lined up with Stevie G, it was all a bit more positive. Obviously, Kent would have made a difference, you know, just having that experience of these ties. But when we're going to places like Benfica, Feyenoord, Porto, and we're managed to find a goal, then we should have managed it in Belgium. But we just didn't look set up to do it. It was all just too negative.
And so I think there's so much to dissect about this. And I think I do want to come to Gio first before we go into the goals and picking apart the defence and the strikers and stuff as well. Because we've been massive. We've praised Giovanni Van Bronckhorst massively in this podcast, particularly for how he can change a game in play, use the subs, use different formations. But David T, you would have seen we were chatting on the night in the group chat, and Chris Ball made a really good point in terms of, if you look at the last few away ties in Europe, and David Ball just alluded to it there, we have set up a bit more conservatively. Whereas under Gerrard, we were aggressive on the front foot, but I don't know, was Gio gambling that we can soak up the pressure and hit in the break?
Yeah, well, I actually think that they played the way we wanted to play. I think that that was the way he wanted to play, that we sit back, they attack us, and we sit back and pick them off. And they done the exact same. They done what, in my eyes, what we should have been doing. I mean, I remember Dick Advocaat saying to one of the players, I didn't hear it from Dick Advocaat, but I heard it from one of the players. He says, give the other team the ball. He says, let them have it. He says, if we're just pushing them back all the time, we're just going to be running against a brick wall all the time. So if you can let the other team come to you, soak up the pressure. No, and that's just what the Union did. They soaked up the pressure. And just like I said the last time, as soon as they sniffed that there was a bit of a loose ball, they were just on top of us. And they got the ball in the tackle. They were stronger in the tackle. I don't know what we were eating before the game, but it certainly affected our tackling. Because I think they won virtually every hard tackle they went into. And it was just nowhere. And yeah, then when you've got, I'm not going to blame the guy. I know a lot of people are writing him off already. But when you've got, Matondo, when you've got him stuck away out in the wing, nobody can get near him. There's no clear pass to him. I mean, let's face it. Matondo, he could have went to the Aldi and got a barbecue box before he walked onto the park and sat and had a barbecue out there, because he just wasn't in the game. He might have got it from the Lidl or any other supermarket, I'll say as well.
Before Aldi starts suing us,
I don't think it'll be the Aldi, it'll be the Lidl, but but anyway, I think we just didn't. Whether we didn't use Matondo or he was just still feeling injured, or sometimes there's psychological time when you're just back from a hamstring injury, and it was only a week ago he was injured. If he's had a hamstring injury, then it's really pretty dangerous to play him at all. But we just didn't link up at all. And as I said, Tillman, he done well really in the beginning. I mean, I thought, oh, we're going to be doing quite good here. But after about 20 minutes, they sussed us out, I think, and then they just went and put their plan into action, and they never looked back, and we looked uphill.
Davey P, only the first goal then, I'm afraid, well, we're going to have to talk about it, as painful as it is. A lot to unpick. Barisic left wanting, again, he had the heart of a mouse. He had all the vigour of a priest going into that tackle. Sands, a bit suspect, losing his man as well. The player gets a shot away, and John McLaughlin has to do better as well. Where do you start with this goal?
No, it was one fuck up after another. I think, you know, they looked like they just wanted it more, to be honest. They were snapping into challenges, as Dave says, you know, they were closing us down. They just looked like they were on their toes moving about that pitch, whereas we looked like we'd lead boots on. You know, the pace we were moving the ball about, it was just painful to watch. But Borna, you know, his ability to defend, you know, balls into the box, as we've seen in the past, isn't the greatest. You know, sometimes he'll have the mad swipe at it. Sometimes he just doesn't have the strength. You know, because you look at the difference Bassey made when Bassey gets into positions like that. It was just pure strength that made Bassey win the ball, and you know, to overpower, you know, whoever was in possession. Borna doesn't have that, so it's a game of roulette every time the ball comes into the box, and Borna's on the end of it because you just don't know what's going to happen. Well, invariably, what happens is we will lose possession, and then for the ball to then get to the edge of the box and. Probably not the greatest shot, and if it did have a deflection, it was minuscule, but it was certainly within a savable range for John McLaughlin, I would have thought, you know, because that's the... And then, you know, we're going to get into the game with Greigs. Greigs, he just saved that ball, you know, he's the short stopper that he is, and he would probably have had a better crack at it than John McLaughlin. It just seemed all a wee bit amateurish at that point. It was a disappointing goal to lose, but you know that there was plenty of time for us to recover, but we never managed that either.
What is your take in the goalkeeping situation? Because that's caused quite a lot of chat. I'll stick with you, Davey P, and then I'll ask yourself, Davey T, as well, because I want both your opinions. There's been a lot of chat on, right, so who is the number one going forward? I think Gio has said that it will be McLaughlin, but is this going to be the case every game of the season where McLaughlin could have done something slightly better? My opinion is that I think every time he lets a goal go in, there will be a herd saying McGregor would have saved that. But if McGregor comes in and plays the cup games, every time we concede from a cross ball, we're going to say John McLaughlin comes for that. It's a bit of a no-win situation, I think. What's your take on Davey P, first of all?
Well, I think Gio's got a decision to make. You know, I would prefer Gio to come out and publicly name John McLaughlin or McGregor. You know, he is my number one. This is my preferred goalkeeper. So, obviously, someone's going to be pissed off with that. But if none of the two of them have the confidence of Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, then he has to go to market, and we need to get a goalkeeper we do have confidence in. So we've got the rest of August to make that decision, because if John McLaughlin's the answer, and you know the alarm bells are going off here, so you're thinking, well, is this good enough? It's because there was the game against Tottenham, you know, and West Ham, you know, when McLaughlin was getting himself tied in knots, and you're thinking, you know, and the goal that... West Ham scored was a bit of a catastrophe, to be honest, and inside the 6-yard box, which I had a wee concern about. So I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, well, is this the goalkeeper that we want to go with? So, but that's Gio's call. He has to have a look at that. I would prefer Gio just to say, this guy's my number one, we're going with it, you know, or we need to go to market. Fine, we just can't take the chance. Can't take the chance. So a long season ahead, there's too much at stake here.
Personally, I'm more than happy with John McLaughlin in goals. I think he is a decent enough shot stopper. He didn't cover himself in glory at that attempt, but he made a good few decent saves in the second half and stopped that tie for being dead. David T, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I actually think it depends. In the Scottish League, you're going to be hit with high balls a lot more than you are going to be in Europe. So I wouldn't actually, and I know you were saying last week that you would prefer one keeper to be playing all the time. But I think McGregor is probably better for European nights because he's a shot stopper. European teams don't cross balls into the box the way Scottish teams do. But, I mean, with the goal, I mean, I think in the olden days, I probably get done for saying it now, but in the olden days, we would say he looked like a big lassie.
the way he went. 2022,
mate. Can't be saying that. But, yeah, we're not allowed to say that anymore because the women are excellent and they had a brilliant European championship there that I think everybody enjoyed. So
the Rangers women are league winners, by the way. That's more than what the men can say.
Yeah, but in the old days, that's what we would have said, and that he just didn't look comfortable at all. I don't know what he was doing, but he certainly wasn't going for the ball anyway. And if he was, then I think he maybe might need his contact lenses in. But no, he wasn't good. But during the games for Scotland, I think he'll get a lot more high balls coming in. I mean, even the Continentals, a lot of time they're taking corners. They take short corners. They don't even put it into the middle of the box. So, yeah, I think for Europe, I would prefer McGregor. And for Scottish games, where you really need somebody, a goalkeeper that can play a bit of football as well to keep possession, then I think McLaughlin's the better choice for their games. But maybe in a perfect world, maybe we should go out and get somebody else. That's
my only worry about swapping keepers about is we've seen it last season under Gerrard where McGregor was playing two games, McLaughlin in for one, and I think that really unsettled the defence last year. Not having that consistency, so I think that's my only worry there, Davy.
Yeah, that's a good point. That would, but I think I actually think last year of when McGregor came in, that you could see that the defenders at crosses, at high balls, at corners, the defenders were absolutely scared because, yeah, I mean when McGregor doesn't come, your centre halves have got to be spot on. If your centre halves are no spot on, one of these big Scottish centre backs is going to put the ball in the net. You can, and I think just as I'm on, probably you were talking about Barisic there before. I've got a point in that as well. I think teams have realised the space behind Barisic, and even when Bassey was there as well, I think that back left position for us, teams have spotted that and are using that, because umpteen times I've seen in recent games the teams putting high balls up into that area and letting the defenders chase it and letting the forwards chase it. So I think that's a thing that they've got to look at as well.
But I think that's a really good point. And I've always thought that it's uncanny how much a relationship Tav builds with the midfield and the centre-halves, because Tav seems to be covered a lot more. And I think that's just communication between Tav and the midfield and just knowing. Like, so Ryan Jack's really good at covering Tav near. We've never really had that. The left-back, whether it's been Barisic or Bassey, we've seen Kamara do it a couple of times, but it's never been that natural. If the left-back goes forward, either the left centre-half or the one of the midfielders goes and covers. And I don't know if that's maybe because we've never had we've always had Conor Goldson at the right centre-half and we've swapped and changed the left centre-half. Maybe with Ben Davis coming in, that might change a bit and they start building up a bit more. So just a bit more awareness and we do get covered. But I think that is a good point that we've not picked up on.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Ben Davis is left-footed anyway, so that'll make an improvement that you've got a left-footed player there. Because it is difficult. Obviously, a right-footed player isn't as comfortable turning over his left foot as a left-footed player will be.
We've seen that with Sands the other night as well.
Yeah. So I think that's a point they've got to look at. So hopefully that will improve with Davis coming in. But I think Lundstrom has favourites. He's right-footed as well. I mean, it's actually terrible saying a professional footballer's left-footed or right-footed. Actually, they should be both-footed. But I think that's a thing we'll need to go. Go back to goal. Now, I think I've covered the goalkeeper. I think it's, listen, goalkeepers are going to make mistakes. That's unfortunately, if they make a mistake, then it's normally a goal. Whereas if your centre forward makes a mistake, then he's a stupid idiot for a couple of minutes and then it's forgotten about. But I mean, if you're reading the websites, Rangers websites now, then you still hear about Alan McGregor and Ross County. It's still one of the top topics that comes up. So I mean, that's goalkeepers are going to make mistakes, and yeah, they're normally lethal. But as I say, I like McLaughlin coming for corners, and I think in a Scottish game against Scottish teams, that's quite important.
So, Davey, 27 minutes, Davey P, sorry, 27 minutes that goal went in, and it just went from bad to worse, really. Instead of the goal like sparking energy into Rangers, I think we actually started to play worse and loose passes going and just a lack of bravery with going forward. In the half-time, I'm thinking, right, surely we'll change it, but no, it's actually 67 minutes until we make a double sub. Two debuts for Davis and Yilmaz coming on for Jack and Barisic. My other concern with the other night, and again, I'm not going to be a hypocrite and say, is Gio out or anything? He's had a bad night, and it's just been unlucky for us that the players had a bad night at the same time. It's mental how long he took to make a sub when he's been so good at changing the game.
Yeah. We have known since the middle of May that we would be playing Champions League qualifying ties in August, late July, early August. So we get to the tie on the 2nd of August, and we then play a forward line of Matondo, Colak and Tillman, who have never played together. And we then bring on two subs, Yilmaz and Ben Davis, making their debut for Rangers. And I'm thinking that all smacks of the lack of preparation. You know, we have known for 2.5 months we would be coming to this tie. And then when we get there, we're bringing on two guys who have never kicked a ball in anger for Rangers onto the pitch. And I just think that just smacks of amateurism. That's, you know, what were we expecting from those guys? We as a support, you know, are watching that thinking, what the fuck?
I think it's quite reckless as well, because the way that game was going, that could have been a disaster debut for both of them, and it might have been hard to recover for that. So I totally agree with you.
Yeah, their first taste of first-team football with Rangers is to throw them in there. And you're thinking, really? You know, is that it's smacked of desperation. So I'm just thinking, are we in control of this? You know, have we actually thought this through? Have we prepared ourselves, you know, for this tie? And it was just by that time, I just wanted the final whistle to go. Because, you know, the boy broke through and was clean through in goal. And it was, God bless John McLaughlin, because he saved us at that time. Because at 3-0, you know, it's just, that's it, dead. It's dead in the water. So I'm thinking, by this time, you know, we look a total disaster. An absolute disaster. I think, how did we get to this? How did we get to this? It was quite very disappointing. You know, I would say disappointing, bordering on, you know, a little angry on Tuesday night after that game, thinking, what the fuck are we doing here? It just looked like we were all over the place. So we've got the opportunity this Tuesday to rectify all of that and make amends. I mean, obviously, a track history of recovering these situations isn't that encouraging, but you know, we'll no doubt we'll give it our best crack. You know, and I've seen some of the chat, you know, as Dave has mentioned, you know, we might get Morelos back, we'll get Kent. I mean, relying on Alfredo Morelos after being out for 6 months is also smacks of desperation. we should have a squad there who we can rely on, who have been, you know, in a pre-season preparing, you know, for these games, far too important, far too much at stake here. And yet when we arrive on the day, it looks like we'd met in the car park outside.
But Davey, see the Ryan Jack, I mean, you talk about minutes and getting minutes into the legs for the pre-season games. Did Ryan Jack play in any of the games in the pre-season?
He did, but he did look sluggish. He featured him, wasn't he? I think he was, he maybe wrote the first half against West Ham and he came on at the end against Spurs. I don't know how much he played against Blackpool, but I thought he did look sluggish, Davey.
Yeah, because normally he's great at covering behind Tavernier, but it wasn't that great. I was going to say as well, the Jack in my boot done more than he did last night, but he did, I just don't think he looked fit. I mean, I don't know how fit the boy McCann is, but I would have put him in there last night instead of Jack, to be honest with you, because I think McCann can run a game far better than Jack can. Jack's a great fireman, as they call it, putting out fires over everywhere. But he's not that really great at going forward and playing telling passes. I mean, I would have had the likes of that boy McCann in there last night. On you go.
To say the obvious, we should have used Arfield and Davis. So in a game where we struggle to use the ball well and we struggle to connect the midfield to the attack, Stephen Davis can come on and control the game at his own tempo. Arfield can make the forwards runs. I don't know why we didn't get them on at halftime.
Totally agree with you.
When the starting lineup, you know, when we've got Lundstrom, Jack and Kamara all on the same team, you know, we started with the three at the back, you know, and Lundstrom was kind of covering the right-hand side, supposedly to let Tav bomb on, which they were just cutting him off. They were just closing him down, you know, so as they did all over the pitch, just closing him down. So he wasn't getting much joy. But when Kamara, we did move back and then Lundstrom moved forward, you know, we didn't put out the intention that we were actually going to attack these guys. So you're right. I mean, so from Ryan Jack, Glenn Kamara and John Lundstrom, how many of them are going to be getting goals in the box? You know, so, and we would have needed the Matondo and Tillman to be firing to allow these midfielders to make runs, get in the box. The whole thing just fell to bits.
Cholak got a lot of stick, Davey, but see what you're describing there. An element of sympathy for him because he's a striker who's got to rely on service and we set up to not give him any at all.
Yeah. Not once did Matondo receive the ball when he was actually facing the USG goal. Every time he was getting the ball, he was getting back to goal. You know, he was getting to his feet with his back to goal. You know, whereas this guy, who with the pace that he has, he needs the ball, you know, passed to him 5 yards in front of him and just uses blistering pace to be bursting down that wing into the box and to providing Cholak with some service. That boy Cholak just ran about. I mean, I could have played his performance. He just chased the ball. I don't know how many touches he had, but it certainly wasn't many. I mean, absolutely futile. The guy had no service whatsoever, so I don't know how we could say it a bad game. We actually never found out because he never touched the ball too often. It just looked like we'd made it up 10 minutes before we walked onto the pitch.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So things go bad to worse in the 76th minute. David Teal, come to you. You're your man on the continent. VAR, the people no more. This was a shocker. So a deflected shot comes off Ben Davis, and Connor Goldson, who's basically holding hands with him, manages to catch a deflection in his arm. Well, I'm not too sure. Around the shoulder, chest, arm area, give benefit of doubt, it has went to the arm. Nothing he can do about it. Right on the foot of Ben Davis. After the ref listening to the VAR people in his ear, he goes over. And you know, as soon as they go to the telly, it's 99% chance it's going to be given. And he gives a penalty. A baffling decision. Absolutely wild.
No, well, Colin, in terms of the VAR, I mean, we did all right last season out the VAR, you know, because we got a penalty in Dortmund, which only Borna appealed for, you know, which everyone in the when I was certainly watching it, and I think lots of people after the fact thought, you know, what the hell's happening? What's the VAR about? And we ended up getting a penalty. As it turns out, you know, that was a handball. But, you know, this kind of the deflection of Ben Davis and hitting, that, if that's an infringement of the laws, then we're up shit creek, because what's Conor Goldson supposed to do in those instances? You know, what advantage did he deny USG? Actually, the ball fell to Goldson, knocked it into the path of the guy who then had a shot at goal. So they actually gained an advantage from the ball striking Conor Goldson, whether it was his hand or his chest or whatever. But for someone who's in the studio then to watch that and say that was a handball, that's arrant nonsense. It's just beggars belief, to be honest, that they could call that as a foul. You know, that what advantage did they actually gained from the ball striking Conor Goldson? They then get a striking goal, which they wouldn't have had. So it seems they get the best of both worlds. They get the shot on goal, and then because it's touched his arm, albeit, you know, from a yard off Ben Davis, of which it was completely involuntary. Ball then strikes his arm, if it did, and then the VAR say, no, that's now a penalty. That's just insane. That's insane. They're destroying the game.
The only thing...
So, swings and roundabouts, you know, and I think it was they ended up getting the penalty. The guy popped it in. It's 2-0. It was utter shite, but I would think we were more the architects of our demise on Tuesday night than the referee. So I would say, you know, should it have been a penalty? No, but did we fuck it up? Yes, we did. So, and the whole scale of things, you know, is that maybe we'll get one on Tuesday to UEFA. We'll put
to even it up.
To the tom-tom drums, I say, right. Made an arse of that. We need to sort that. So, but no, not for me, you know, it wasn't a penalty, but the ref's given it, the VAR man's given it, he's looked at it, gave it the goal stands, let's go on with it.
What I thought about the penalty was, the only thing I can see that made the far and the referee give it was the position of his hand, which was about here, because he was sliding in the position of his hand, his arm. Yeah, we used to say you're covering your face, but that doesn't seem to be part of the... Yeah, that's a way. But I didn't think it was a penalty. You can't react to something that comes that quick to you. The only thing is now, if they're going to take where your arm is on your body, if it is in a position like this, then they need to give every penalty, every ball that goes like that, they've got to give a penalty for it. Then at least you know the rules and, okay, that's it. But I don't know if you saw the PSV Monaco game. The far actually, there was a shot from Monaco, and the ball hit PSV player's arm. He tried to turn away and he'd hand a wee bit away from his body and it hit his hand. But the referee went over and he watched the television and he turned round back and he's waving his finger about going, no, no penalty, no penalty, and he didn't give it. And then I think, well, yeah, what is the rule? Is it a penalty or is it not a penalty if it hits your hand? The only way to make it sort of a simple is any ball that hits your hand is a penalty. The likes of they do in hockey, what is it you call it? I can't remember, a short corner, a penalty corner or something like that they call it, if it hits your foot. That's the only way that you can get around it, because otherwise there's always going to be, and it doesn't even, they can say Farrell sort it out, but Farrell obviously is not going to sort it out, because with the one incident they got it wrong and the other incident they got it right. So, yeah, it's just a crazy way of, and as I say, it'll never be sorted, because it remains an opinion. It is an opinion, and it remains an opinion, because nobody knows exactly what the rules are for it. And as I say, the only thing I can think of is his hand was here, and is that in a strange position?
How
can it be anything other than a strange position? You know, he's trying to block the shot from the guy who's just struck the ball, you know, so the two of them get together. His arms are with there. They would have to tape his arms to his side for it not to be, you know, anywhere outside his body. You know, it's absolutely insane. So, I mean, if they're going to give drivers down to the position where any time the ball strikes your hand inside the penalty box, irrespective of the context of that, then it's going to be a penalty kick, then the forwards will just target the arm. Don't bother striking at goal. Hit one of the defender's arms, because that's what they're driving us down. So you don't need, I would turn away from the goal, you know. So anyone on any winger who gets to the byline, so don't try and pick out one of your attackers. Pick out one of the defender's arms and you've got a penalty kick.
So
all it has to do is strike his arm. It's a penalty.
So with the actual rules, it's if the player who's, I don't know what the committing player doesn't have the opportunity to move himself out of the way because it's short range, then it's not a foul. So that is the rule. So kind of what David T was saying there, it's VAR makes things easier, but it doesn't eliminate it. It's still, you need the refs to understand the rules, and then you need them to have the right interpretation of the rules and have the right opinion, which is why I do have the fear of it once it comes up to Scotland. It'll make things a wee bit better, but it's still the same clowns. There's got to be operating this and making those decisions.
But Colin, we're going to have bring it into the football where players are running. I mean, you've got it now. Players are running about with their hands behind their back. It's absolutely crazy. What are they trying to do? I mean, if I was a manager, I would say, see the first person to put your hand behind your back, you're getting taken off. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. We're getting players in games running about with their hands behind their back.
They'll say that it's an unnatural position. They'll say that your hand was in an unnatural position. Say, well, running with your hands behind your back is unnatural.
Yeah. So, that's true. Crazy.
So, before we go too much into a rabbit hole, the game's gone. I mean, next we'll be asking everybody plays 4-4-2, and you only bring out one strip a season. Castoro shudder at that thought. I think it's nice to get all that off our chest, but let's look forward, lads. Nice wee segue into next week, or the next shot of game, sorry. Davey P, before we come to Saturday, you touched on it on Tuesday, but we'll discuss Tuesday night just briefly. And I think it's more the occasion that we need to discuss. There's no point in discussing lineup or tactics or anything now. We need to see how Saturday goes, but my worry is how the players react to the occasion. The fans will have a big part to play, but it's not their responsibility to go and put three goals past USG. But if Ibrox is anything like the Malmo game last year, where it's a very nervous, tense atmosphere, I don't know how these players will respond to it. What's your thoughts?
Well, then I think we should be realistic in terms of, you know, for me, it's, we're behind the eight ball here. So the more the fans, the more the Rangers support can get behind the team, drive us on, then that's adding to our cause. But the psyche of the crowd, you know, is strange at times at Ibrox, you know, because they sometimes I think they've come and they've already made their mind up, you know, about how this game's going to go, and they just respond accordingly. So I'm hoping that we can keep the tie live into the well into the second half. That we've and I think we the crowd will have a part to play. I think we need to be patient. So I think we have to kind of put the message out there. We need to win the game over 90 minutes by two clear goals to get it to extra time. So, I mean, if we can absolutely blitz them, so much the better, you know, in the kind of the Leipzig model, just go straight after them, then that would be brilliant. I think if we can get a couple of goals in the first half, then it's back to an even keel, and then it's who's got the balls for it. So I'm hope that, I mean, they haven't become bad players. I think we just need to look at the USG. I mean, would you say USG were an absolutely brilliant side? What they were was they a team who absolutely gave their all. And I thought Rangers were far too pedestrian. It's all far too slow, you know, and we seemed to be wanting to just suck up time by passing the ball about and get out of there with a 0-0 draw. Whereas I would much rather prefer, we have the players to do it, but I would much rather prefer we go on the front foot and go after them. Because there's no away goals advantage anymore. That doesn't matter. You're playing the team for, you know, 180 minutes, and it's who scores the most goals. So the away home advantage thing, obviously the crowd at Ibrox should bring themselves to bear, you know, and help the team as much as possible. But in saying that, the onus is on the players to do their bit. There's nothing we can do on the sidelines. We can create the best atmosphere, the best situation possible for the team, but it's up to them to deliver it ultimately.
Davey T, there's two sides of the one coin. While I've not seen anything from Rangers on Tuesday to suggest that we're going to come out all guns blazing, on the other hand, I've not seen anything from USG to suggest that they're world beaters. And I'm looking back to last season, all those special nights we had in Europe, like Dortmund, Leipzig, Braga, the unthinkable was done with Rangers. So the tie isn't done yet, and I think we do need to go and believe in that.
I would love to call, and I love your positivity, but I think you've got to take into consideration when we were playing in Leipzig and Dortmund, and we had Ataribo, we had Alfie, Roof, Bassi. I mean, there's virtually five of your best players, four or five of your best players are away. And we've not seen anything of the new players yet that's going to say they're going to make up for the players that we've lost. So I'm worried about that. I don't think they were world beaters last night, but then again, neither were Malmo. In fact, we should have hammered Malmo. So that worries me. I would love to. I'd love to be so positive, but I just don't think this team is far enough along the line yet to. They looked like strangers last night. Really, and whether it's the tactics from Gio or what it was, I don't know. But they just didn't look anything last. And it wasn't just last night. Let's face it, Livingston was the same. I mean, we kept the ball against Livingston, but we hardly broke them down. It was only the two goals, and one was a super free kick. It wasn't much better. We were just the same. I mean, I think it was Davey Pollock that says the horseshoe game. And he came away with the horseshoe. We pass the ball like a horseshoe every time. And then it goes out to Tavernier, goes back from Tavernier to Goldson, Goldson over to Sands, Sands over to Barisic, and then it goes back the other way. And, I mean, it was okay saying we had, what was it, 83% from the game. But if 60 or 70% of that's playing along the back line, then it's not doing any good. It's not going to get you goals. And that's what, I mean, as I said, that Union, they just knew that last night. They said, when their players have got the ball, that's great. just let them pass there. And that's the way. And as I say, it was Livingston as well. So, and you know, at the weekend, Kilmarnock are going to do the exact same. I mean, that's not going to be any different. And if we come out with Kamara and Jack and Lundstrom, things are not going to change.
So this is the perfect opportunity, because USG on Tuesday, they're going to try and sit in and make life difficult for us, as are Kilmarnock on Saturday. So this is the perfect game to, if Rangers are going to be up for the fight, this is how they get themselves up for it. This is the perfect pre-test before Tuesday night. Davey P, Kilmarnock on Saturday, the first home game in a new season. I know, despite the Tuesday's result, we'll all be excited about it. I think Ibrox will be bouncing. In terms of the team, what changes do you want to see in Tuesday? Because Gio did allude to it that things have to change for Saturday.
Oh, we're going to be a whole load more positive. You know, we're going to take the game to Kilmarnock with all we've got. We're going to come up against the low block as per. And I would really like to, as I kind of alluded to last week, was that if we can find a way just to blow that away and have teams come to Ibrox knowing that when they come up with 10 men behind the ball, they're getting it anyway. So they would as well having a go. You know, let's get see if we can get up the park. So, I mean, possession figures against Livy, you know, of 83%, it's just nuts. And we ended up only winning 2-1. So I'm hoping that we can get up with a whole load more positive. Plenty of energy, plenty of movement. And that's how it happens. You want chaos in the box. So when the ball arrives, we don't want it too predictable. It's got to be players moving all over the place. You know, one touch football. You know, the horseshoe thing came from Gio's time at Feyenoord. It was the Feyenoord fans who termed the Gio's tactic as the horseshoe, because it was that during his time there, when they would sit in the coop, the tub, and roast them, you know, for the playing the ball across the back all the time. So we've inherited that from him. So, but you can see that he's clearly on the training ground having an influence in terms of retaining possession and, you know, waiting for. But Dave's dead right. You know, we were playing the ball about, but the minute we tried to move it forward, they just picked us off, you know, by just closing us down, zooming it into the challenges, and the whole thing broke down. We never got beyond that. Our midfield just failed to function, and they were straight onto us. And then they were bursting at pace, players moving all over the place, and pinging it down the wing, getting into our box. Whereas, did we get into their box at all in the second half? Was there a meaningful attack? I must have been behind the couch when that happened, because I didn't see too much of it. But I'm hoping on Saturday we can try a few things. The midfield's going to be a whole lot more positive. And hopefully the guys have a wee bit more game time. Get Yilmaz on and give him 90 minutes to get accustomed to, you know, to playing in that environment and with his teammates, you know, because he's met these guys days ago. And yet, you know, we're now here in a Champions League qualifying tie. I mean, literally 2 days. It's hoping we can pull the rabbit out of the hat for Tuesday night. It's not beyond us. But what isn't set beyond us is a whole load more attitude, you know, in terms of pace, movement, determination. We just looked like we were second best in Tuesday night to a team who, I would say, man for man, technically we're a better players, but they just outfought us, and it wasn't a pretty watch.
Davey, keep him on Saturday. Davey P alluded to it there, Yilmaz coming in. I would like to see Davis, Yilmaz both coming in, centre back and left back. In terms of the midfield to front, I do want to see Lawrence, Mitondo and Tillman starting, Kent if he's fit, alongside Lundstrom, maybe an Arfield, or even drop Tillman into the midfield and, you know, have play with two wingers. That's, if I see Lundstrom, Jack and Kamara, I'm not going to be a happy bunny.
No, that's one of the things I've been saying all night. It's, that midfield just doesn't work. I'm really at the point now. I really think let's look to the youth as well. I know a lot of people are against it, but I think that guy McCann has shown enough to at least give him part of the game. No, Lowry, everybody was shouting for, but seemingly he's been a bad boy during the summer. I don't know anything, but I've just read that the other people saying that he came back in not a great condition. That's hearsay, so don't put it down as fact.
That'll be in the front page of the Daily Record tomorrow. Gallant View exclusive, Alex Lowry being on the junk.
Yeah, all right. But He's obviously fell out of contention for some reason. Whether he's been injured or not, I don't know. But I really think that these players, they showed enough last year to warrant them a place. And I really think, I think Ryan Jack is reaching the end. I don't know whether his legs are going or gone, or whether he'll come back. Maybe he's just not fit at this minute. But he's also a player. I mean, when you've got him and Lundstrom, they're virtually the same kind of player. They're putting out fires, and you don't really need two of them. And then when you put Kamara into the mix as well, I mean, he's tried playing Kamara more in a forward position, but he doesn't look comfortable there. He just doesn't look comfortable. I think Tillman has booked his place. He's got to come on.
He's looked good in spells, to be fair. And I think once he gets settled, he'll be a signing and a half.
But I mean, if I was picking the team, I think you playing in Scotland, go with three centre halves, push up the two wingers, and put Tillman in as a number 10. Going to running about. I've got to look at that guy's name, Cholak.
If you were picking the team, it'd be anybody who has a British first name. That's who's fucking gone in.
That's it. Bill and Ben and
Tommy.
But I live in Holland as well, so I shouldn't be used to these international names. But we need more going forward. We need a bigger target than Cholak alone up front. He can't do it. Alfie's done it, and Alfie's quite good at it. But I mean, Alfie's the strength of and even then it didn't work. I mean, we've played bad with Alfie in the team. Let's not say that Alfie's been brilliant all the time as well, because he's not. We've had games where we thought, "What's it all about, Alfie?" But
I'm going to come to the big man's defence here, because we've seen this time and time again with different strikers where we try and play as if it is Alfredo Morelos, and we need to learn to adapt to different styles of play. Cholak has a part to play in this side, but no, just leaving them up front to talk to the fucking three Belgian centre-halves. We do need to provide them with service, so I'm going to come to his defence a wee bit. He's no Alfredo Morelos, but he wasn't signed to be Alfredo Morelos.
Well, I'll definitely agree with you there, Colin. I'm certainly not putting the blame in Cholak. It definitely wasn't. But I mean, when you've got Mantondo stuck away out in the right, and you've got Tillman stuck away out in the left, and you nearly broke the television there. But it just doesn't work. And then you've got this funnel into the midfield where you've got two midfield players stuck, and you've got the defenders passing the ball about them, and it's going from left to right and left to right. It's so easy to defend. So easy to defend. And as I said, the other team, they just... here's Cholak, he's coming. You get him now, okay. They passed him around. If we're going to play like that the whole season, then I don't think we're going to do that brilliant, to be honest with you. I mean, we'll certainly beat all the sort of easier teams, but we're going to struggle against the teams that can play football.
So we're feeling good for Saturday then. Is that the summary?
Well, I'm going to say one thing. Why the hell, when Lawrence was playing so good as just behind the forwards, why the hell did we drop him for the most important game we've had this season? I just don't
understand. And that's what I'm saying. Tom Lawrence has to come back in on Saturday. And I'm very much looking for the team to start on Saturday to be forward-thinking and with a view that the team we set up on Saturday goes into Tuesday and giving them a wee run of playing together. Maybe minor changes here and there, but has to be a forward-thinking team. And I think Tom Lawrence has to start both games for me.
Yeah, at least you've got somebody that can shoot and somebody that wants to shoot. I mean, I've even seen Goldson a few times running through, and I've thought, you can hit them from there. Why don't you do it for once or twice? But he never seems to.
Never known Saturday.
It comes straight from the training ground. And the reason Lawrence didn't play was because Gio just did what he did against Braga, did what he did against Leipzig. He's going there to keep a low-scoring game to take it back to Ibrox. So he's not doing the adventurous type. He's not on the front foot. He just wants to go there, close the whole thing down, take the tie back to Ibrox live. It ended up blown up in our face, you know, with the VAR. Because I think Gio would probably have been all right with 1-0. 2-0 makes it a completely different game. And it was possibly 3-0. It could have been worse. So Gio is his conservative approach in the away ties is not doing us any favours. Because we saw what Stevie G could do in getting up the park and scoring goals, and we were getting results. But that's not Gio's way. He's just a wee bit more withdrawn in terms of, you know, his approach to away ties. You see the trend. You can see what's happening. You know, because we scored one goal against Red Star Belgrade. The outlier in all of this was the game in Dortmund when we went and popped a few in. But after that, you know, since that game, we've only actually scored one away goal. So something's got to change. But so Gio has to either get better players to play the system that he wants to play, or he changes the system. So because it's clearly not working.
Well, you always did, Dave. And when you went in Europe in the old days, it was always said, if we can keep it to 1-0 or a draw, we're happy. And I think that's the way he's still going now. And but I mean, if you look, I think the way Gerrard played, Gerrard was quite hoping that you would go back with one goal to nil or two goals to nil if you could. I mean, if you look the way we played it under Gerrard, then it was far more attacking than it is with Gio. And I think last year in the league, Gio made a big mistake when he came in as well. When remember he tied Tavernier back as a true defender. Who now didn't let him go forward. I mean, the games cost us big at that time. And look what happened to Tavernier last night. He got caught up. I mean, I think Tavernier's a great player. I think he's probably one of the biggest legends since the old legends that we all know. I think Tavernier's going to, in a few years, he's going to be a legend. And that boy ran rings on him last night. I don't know the boy's name, but he ran rings on him last night, and yeah, he kept having ear back, and that's just unfortunate. That's back to the drawing board.
Aye, well, I think we've got to start wrapping it up, but I agree with Gio. I think we need to take the learnings that tactic won't always work, and Tuesday night isn't the first time he's done it, but I do think there's a mixture of the players need to take responsibility as well, because no tactics in the world can account for a player just shitting himself or not being able to make a 5-yard pass. But we're feeling good, boys, because it's come Saturday when we scudded Kelly 5-6-0, there will be a distant memory. We'll be looking ahead to Tuesday. Your wife clearly agrees with me, yeah. Davey. So,
yeah.
on that note,
I was worried about the four dogs. I've got four dogs in the room. I was worried about them. It's my wife that's barking.
So, on that note, we've got to wrap up, gents. But just a wee bit of housekeeping, as always. We'll be back live Monday night, round about 8:00, half 8. We'll send out all the posts on Sunday night once we've got a confirmed time. So, join in on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, wherever you watch your pods live. and get your comments, questions into the comments section, and we'll chat them through. We'll also be back with a slight post-match reaction on Saturday as well. All that's left to do is thank my two lovely guests, the two Davies. First of all, Davey Pollock, thanks for coming on and give me your prediction for Saturday.
I'm hoping that, you know, after last predictions, I mean, our track record isn't very good.
Oh, Monday night was terrible, terrible, by the way.
But I'm going for 3-0 on Saturday. Rangers get a couple in the first half. You know, I'm hoping that Gio is going to put the game to bed, kind of early doors, and with a view to getting some bodies on the pitch with Tuesday in mind. So, but Kelly, you know, they've just come up. You know what they're going to do. They're going to everyone behind the ball, and they've got that guy Power back, you know, who was at St Mirren, and they've got big Kyle up front. So, you know, on paper, we should absolutely blitz them. But, you know, we said that about Livingston last week and the job we made of that. But I'm hoping that, you know, another week in the training, a few more days in the training ring, wouldn't even be a week. But Yilmaz in, I want to see Yilmaz in. Ben Davis, who's left-footed, so with a view to getting a settled side. And I'm hoping that 3-0 should see us good, a wee bit of confidence for Tuesday night, and then we go at these guys with everything that we've got. We've got nothing to lose now. Let's go for it.
Can't wait. Thank you very much for coming on, mate.
Thank you, Colin. And good luck, David.
David T, give your prediction.
Well, I Ibrox. I'll go for 2-0. Although, yeah, we seem to be in the habit of giving away stupid goals again, so hopefully we don't. So I'm going to say we'll end that and it'll be 2-0. The one thing I'll say about Davies, he actually tried to put a few crosses into the box yesterday when he came on, so he was a wee bit more forward-thinking than any of the other defenders at that time. So I'm putting some hope in him that he can change things.
Might even get a goal or two himself, never know.
Yeah, that's it. Maybe he'll teach goals into shoot from about 30 yards.
Thanks very much for coming on, Davey.
Okay, thanks. Loved it.
And no, but I'm going to go. My ever optimistic prediction, which I'll probably make an ass of myself again, I have done for the last 2 or 3 weeks of these predictions, 4-0 Rangers, I think. If we're going to be worth our salt this season, this is the type of result that we need to bounce back from quickly. And I'm fully expecting Gio to have a rocket up the players' arses, and Kilmarnock will take the brunt of that. So Rangers 4, Kilmarnock 0. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. Have a great weekend. I hope your team wins. We'll be back with you on Monday. And just remember, we are the people. Take care.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.